Hello and welcome to the Being Well podcast. I'm Forrest Hansen. Our most important relationships are often the ones we have with our children, parents, and partners. So it's poignant to recognize that these are often the ones that come with the greatest challenges as well. Learning to navigate them with care and how we can heal old wounds and grow toward the future can have an enormous positive impact on our general happiness and well-being. That's why I'm really looking forward to learning from our guest today, Dr. Christine Carter. Dr. Carter is an expert on the often challenging arts of parenting and happiness. She's the author of The Sweet Spot, How to Achieve More by Doing Less and Raising Happiness, 10 Simple Steps for More Joyful Kids and Happier Parents. She's also a sociologist and senior fellow at UC Berkeley's Greater Good Science Center, where she draws on scientific research to help people lead their most joyful, meaningful, and authentic lives. She's been featured on The Oprah Winfrey Show, The Dr. Oz Show, NPR, The Today Show, and even The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. Dr. Carter also writes an award-winning blog, Brave Over Perfect, and her work has earned her 2 nominations from the American Sociological Association for Public Sociology and an award from the Council on Contemporary Families. In the first part of our conversation, we'll be tackling topics related to parenting and relationships, while in the second, we'll explore the sweet spot, that point of balance where we are productive and powerful while remaining joyful and relaxed. So, Christine, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you for having me. It's fun to be here with you both.
Yeah, absolutely. So you have a background in sociology and positive psychology. Where did your interest in childhood and parenting in particular come from? And could you share a bit more about your background with people who may not be so familiar with your work?
Sure. So yes, I have a PhD in sociology. And at the time that I was in graduate school, I was also pregnant with my second child and I had a toddler. And that coincided with my interest in the sociology of happiness, because I come from a long line of anxious women. And I just thought, you know what? I think that there are things that we can do in our social structures. And that was my background before I went to graduate school as well. To foster certain emotions and maybe inhibit others. And I was just interested in the aspects of our emotional life that are not genetic, right? That we have some control over, and that as a mom and as a new mom, that I could sort of shape through our family and our family practices. So that's how I became interested in the sociology of happiness, and also then, of course, in parenting, because I was teaching myself what I needed to know. And so, and now I'm mostly a writer and a speaker and a coach.
I have to ask, what about anxious men? Were your fathers and grandfathers and great-grandfathers not anxious?
No, they were very chill, fortunately.
Because the women were anxious, right?
Yeah, you know, and I actually found, like, on myself, like, both things were sort of contagious, right? Like, I would be around, I would watch how my dad would respond to my anxiety or my mom's anxiety or whatever. And he was just so chill about all of it. And I could absorb that and behave in the same way. And actually, I learned to respond to anxiety in the way that he did throughout my sort of older adolescence, or actually my young adulthood.
So you make a direct reference there to the relationship that you had with your mom and how it might have kind of trickled down into your formation as a kid. And in Raising Happiness, you actually begin the first chapter of the book. The very first piece of text that many readers read is a quote from the legendary psychiatrist Carl Jung, which is, "Nothing has a stronger influence psychologically on children than the unlived life of the parent." And you're kind of giving immediate reference to that here. So to give some context for that, what do you mean by that unlived life? And how are we affected by the unlived lives of our parents?
Well, that is a very big question, Forrest, and I'm going to answer it personally, so that with the example of my own mother and with me, and really hope that my mom doesn't listen to this podcast.
Well, we appreciate your openness here.
But obviously, I chose that quotation because I felt that my own mother, she was anxious because of her own unlived life. She gave up even knowing really who she was, I think, to be a parent. And that was an awful lot of pressure for me and my brother to live under. You know, we grew up hearing her say, well, when I was your age, I could only be a teacher or a nurse. And I didn't really want to be either, but I became a teacher and a parent. And, you know, and it just, we were always really aware that she was not living her best life. And she wasn't fulfilling her potential. She didn't even know really what that was. She had just sort of subverted all of her desires to take care of us and, frankly, to take care of my father. And it was that gender role. So you're right, Rick, that triggered a lot of the anxiety.
So one way in which the unlived life of the parent can affect the child, like Jung said, and you're saying here, if I'm hearing you right, is that kids can take on a kind of guilt or feel that somehow it's their fault that their mom or dad, let's say, has an unlived life, or that it's their fault that their parent is depressed, for example. What are some other ways in which the unlived life of the parent can affect a child, such as the way that maybe a parent would project onto their child their own unfulfilled aspirations for themselves?
Well, I'm going to continue to answer this personally. I didn't know this was going to be therapy, right? But okay.
Well, I mean, you're in the room, so to speak, with a therapist. So I suppose it was inevitable.
You know, so one of the things that happened to me with my mom was that she, like her wishes and her dreams, she was very explicit about what she wanted for me. And I'm fortunate in that what I wanted for myself wasn't that far off. But we could really see how that could go very, very wrong if what she wanted for me was really out of integrity with what I wanted for myself, right? Wow. And you know, we joke now that sometimes when she's questioning my decisions because it's not what she would want for herself and I'm doing something different, right? I'll often say, well, I'm going to do this, Mom, because I'm a completely separate person than you, right? Like, it's a joke. Like, it's so hard for her to believe that I actually am making an informed decision that's different than the one that she would have made. And I think, now that I'm a parent, I see myself doing this all the time too, right? Like, it's hard to remember. Our children are completely separate people and their decisions are valid and the things that they want are different and that's okay. So it's an easy mistake to make. And obviously, I turned out okay. Right? The unlived, I mean, I would say you guys may differ, but you know, there were some like really big failures along the way that I think that I would never blame on my mom, but I would blame on my own confusion about what I wanted versus what she wanted for me. So for example, my children's father, I'm not married to anymore. He is delightful. He is the nicest guy ever. I love him. He's a great dad. He is the perfect guy for my mother, right? Like, I had her checklist in my head. He even worked for my father for 10 years, right? Like, I married somebody for them instead of for me. And obviously, once again, it all worked out great because we're great friends and I'm happily remarried and it's all worked out fine.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you can see how a parent's identity can easily be absorbed by the child. And then it creates some dissonance.
Yeah, absolutely. So as either a parent or as a child, even an adult child, as as you are, as I am, as Rick is in his own way, when we talk about parent-child in child-rearing and parenting in general, I think we spend an enormous amount of time talking about a parent who's raising a child kind of under 8 years of age. Yeah. And we don't spend as much effort on all the years that happen after that, after those kind of quote-unquote formative years from 15 to 30, so to speak. And I think that there's still an enormous amount of good stuff we can do inside of that relationship. The parenting process or the childing process, if you will, doesn't have to stop when we're 15 or 18 or something like that. So if you're on either side of that equation, and you feel you have that experience with somebody is having a hard time disentangling from them, what are some of the things that you can either do inside your own mind from the child side of it to understand that separation, or as a parent to appreciate the separation that your child might be wanting to have from you?
Oh, it's such a good question. And I can't wait to hear what you have to say, Rick, about this. The first thing that comes to mind is to simply acknowledge with your parent or with your child, it could happen on either end of things, that you're separate people, right? Mm-hmm. And to bring some acceptance to the whole situation, and also to the emotions that the situation brings up. So by that, I mean, sort of like bring acceptance, like, okay, mom, I accept that you want X for me, but I want Y for myself. And I also accept that you're confused by my decision and a little disappointed in me. And I also accept that that makes me feel furious with you and whatever else it brings up with me. So you sort of look at the situation head on and don't resist it. This is the way mothers and daughters are, fathers and sons, parents and children, right? And and when we resist a situation that is triggering emotionally like that, we just tend to amplify it. We're just giving our parents something to push against or our child something to push against. The whole thing gets bigger. So to just bring acceptance and then also to the emotions, right? And we accept that I might accept that I feel really angry or frustrated or like I just resentful or whatever is coming up for me. It can really help to label what is coming up for us, right? Mm-hmm. Labeling the emotions so that we can really see what we're dealing with. And we do that not so that the emotions go away if they're challenging emotions, but simply because it's a much more effective way to deal with the situation, right? So we're just accepting this is causing resentment in me. I don't need the resentment to stop. I don't need you to fix it. It's just like, this is what's happening. It's just a way of being really present to it. And then moving on, right? So sometimes moving on is just like having a little bit of compassion for yourself as the child or for your parent who is, you know, overstepped one more time, right? You know, and just the forgiveness that comes with, like, it's totally necessary if you're going to be in a close relationship with a parent or a child as an adult.
Reflecting on my own tangled relationship with my parents, you make me think about the ways in which I feel that as people approach each other, they have these unasked but vital questions in thought balloons over their heads. And as a parent, I think very often that unasked question toward their child, even an adult child, is, do you love me? Mm-hmm. Do you cherish me? Do you appreciate me? Do you love me? Are you for me? It's really deep. Flip the other way. I think very often that young adults say, or adult or adolescent child has a question along the lines of, will you let me be free? Can I be me? Can I be independent? Can I be autonomous around you? So if we are willing to discern the unasked questions hovering over the heads of the other person and kind of lead with an answer that's reassuring, then we can address that question and sort of get on with things. So that if we lead with communicating to our parents, I so love you. I so am grateful to you. You did a great job. I'm going to be there for you for the rest of your life. You know, then parents kind of chill out. Flip the other way. If you tell your kids, look, it's okay. I respect your autonomy. Please don't drive me crazy. But otherwise, you know, I'm really happy to give you as much room as you really need. I'm not going to try to over control you or hem you in. Then the kid can relax. So I think about that context here, including in other frameworks like in intimate relationships. What are the unasked vital questions that we have of each other? And can we listen for those questions and address them up front and thereby reassure and calm down the other person?
Mm-hmm. I feel really moved hearing that because it makes me realize that my mom's unasked question has often been, do you need me?
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's a really essential question for her, given how much she's sacrificed for us when we were little. And, you know, so.
Yeah. Do I still matter to you?
Right.
Am I important in your world? Do you still need me in some
ways? Do I still have significance in the world now that you're an adult? Yeah. You know?
Do I have a special role that's irreplaceable in your life?
Right.
Speaking from the perspective of somebody who's 31 and seeing a lot of friends who are a little bit younger than I am, kind of going through this transitional period with their parents, where they're off to college for the first time, or they're out of the house, or then they fully move out, or they enter into a meaningful relationship with a significant other, or whatever it is. Particularly, I think, to return to sort of that gendering that we were talking about earlier, for a lot of moms who really created a lot of their self-identity around being a mother, to when so much of your identity is wrapped up inside of that, when you see that direct mothering period of your life ending, I think that can be really jarring for somebody, very fairly in a lot of ways. So,
yes.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm watching it on my end with, you know, so my two oldest daughters are away at school now. And, you know, I'm watching all my friends too become empty nesters. And I don't think that it's just previous generations. Like, I wouldn't say that I've only ever been a mother and now that role is going away. But it is, it's interesting. And it's really interesting to watch from the girls' perspective too. I love this unanswered question thing, because I'm going to go back and listen to this podcast again, Rick, because the like narration that you just gave, I think so typifies what my kids who've just gone off to college are going through, right? Mm-hmm. Like, are you going to give me space, or are you just going to be all in my business, right? I mean, imagine having me as a mother. I'm a professional advice giver, right?
You know? Like, I mean, I've lived that life a little bit, so.
Constantly compelled. So, Forrest, what advice do you have for your dad and I?
Oh, man. Jeez. What a profound question. I mean, I think that, not to brown nose a little bit here, but I think that I've been very blessed in the role that I've been in, because my dad's always been very aware of the fact that he's a clinical psychologist. And he has always been extremely careful about, quote unquote, psychologizing his children. So I would say that in a lot of ways, our relationship has really been quite normal. And it could have really not been. I think of a lot of moments earlier in my life where there absolutely could have been a moment of like profound intervention that really would have rubbed me the wrong way, even if it had been intended with only the best at heart. And that's somebody who is literally a professional at helping other people inside of their own relationships.
I'm so curious, when did your dad not act?
Oh, man. I mean, I'm trying to think of a specific example. I would think that a lot of it would come down to moments inside of our family dynamics. Moments where, when I was younger, I've spoken very openly about having a pretty rough relationship with my sister. And my sister had a pretty rough relationship with me. And that kind of created a stew inside of the household of a lot of sort of eggshell walking at any given moment in time between the four of us. And I think that there were many, many, many moments where dad could have more strongly intervened psychologically, all the way up to saying, hey, you guys are just going to go to therapy here. And that's just kind of the way it is. And that just kind of never happened. And I think it's for the best that that never happened, because I think that we would have resented that sort of intervention as opposed to being able to ultimately work it out ourselves. And now I have a lovely relationship with my sister. But I'm not sure if we ever would have gotten to that point of having a lovely relationship if it had felt sort of forced upon us by the community at large. And I think that the only times where that healing process was slowed was when it felt like there was a kind of a external intervention of some kind, where people were trying to reconcile our relationship rather than allowing it to just sort of do what it kind of had to naturally do. So that's definitely a way where I think that the softer hand was definitely the more valuable.
And the acceptance, right, that we were just talking about, right? Mm-hmm. I think a lot of times when, as parents, we try to intervene in our children's lives for the better, because we're really knowledgeable and wise and well-intentioned.
Oh, of course, of course.
Right? We do this, but we're resisting what's actually happening for them in a way. You know, it's sort of like, okay, what you're going through is not okay. And you don't really have the tools to work it out yourself. Now, sometimes that is true, but with a lot of just like normal childhood struggle, I think that, at least speaking for myself, I think that I would tend to intervene too often. And I think that this is typical of like, I think my mother was the original helicopter parent. And so I've been a little bit more careful about it, but certainly as a generation of parents, we have such a bad reputation for over-involving ourselves. Yeah.
I know we're going to wrap up this segment on parenting and childhood pretty soon, but I wanted to get this question in. So when I And I really appreciate what you said there, Forrest. And I am immediately, of course, thinking of times when I didn't do the wise thing that you said. Mm. And more generally, I've often felt that almost all of my mistakes as a parent and in relationships begin with my anger, including subtle forms of exasperation, irritation, frustration, annoyance, or a sense of being obstructed in goals of various kinds, including my goals for my kids to be happy and to grow and develop. So here you are. You are an expert on parenting, Christine. And so I wonder if you could speak about tips for parents, whether they're actively raising kids or they're in relationship with an adult child, as to how they can practice with their anger, particularly related to family life, including the ways in which anger at their partner, say, gets displaced onto their kids. Any suggestions?
Yes. Okay, I would go back to the first step is always acceptance, right? And it's not necessarily to get rid of the anger. It's to ask why the anger, like, what is it really about? So I find, you already mentioned it, projection is often. There are a couple of things with anger. One is projection and the other is distancing. So projection was what I call the you spot it, you got it, that kind of thing. So when I'm angry at one of my kids for something, the first thing I do is look at, like, am I angry at myself about something? Right? Like, what is happening with me that this is triggering actual anger? Because she's just 15. Right? You know, it's like she's going through her whole thing. She's not trying to make me angry, right? So that's the projection piece of things. And it can be often, like, in families, it could be your partner, it could be another child that's making you angry. And that creates tension, and having it not be released somewhere else, it's a lot of times it's the, like, you know, the walking wounded, right? Like the next kid that walks in the room is a target. Right? We're all familiar with how that goes. So that's why it's sort of the first and most important thing to do is to look at, okay, just to bring presence. Like, I am really angry right now. And what is that doing? It's making me tense. It's making me snappish. And then what do I need to do for myself right now? So that brings me to the distancing thing. Anger is one of those really, it's a distancing emotion, right? It puts distance between you and other people. And sometimes that's a safety thing. A lot of times it's a boundary thing in families, right? Like we've crossed a boundary, and our anger can tell us that we need to back up a little bit. Or somebody else has crossed a boundary and they're all in our business. And then we need to back away, right? So whenever I'm angry, I remember that it might not be about the person I'm angry at. It might be about myself. And that usually a first step, no matter what it's about, is to put some distance between me and other people before I do say something I regret.
Yeah, absolutely. To kind of close this part of our conversation with you on, in all of your research, in all of the research you've consumed, and all of the work you've done individually, of course, every situation is different. But is there a set of kind of key traits that you've seen be common among people who are, quote unquote, good parents, people who end up forming a positive relationship with their children?
Oh, that's such a big question. I think I've written a book about that.
I was about to say, I mean, this is essentially your book.
I think that there were 10 things.
Yeah, there were
10
things, and these were the key traits. But I'm just sort of wondering, maybe more at a macro level. Yeah.
No, that's big. I mean, I think that you've just said it. I'm just going to add one word, right? Like, it's the good enough parent, right? It's the parent who learns how not to be critical of themselves or the other, their child or their spouse or whatever. This is not actually, I'm terrible at not being critical, just saying. But but I actually go really easy on myself. I can admit that and say it with some humor because I have a tremendous amount of compassion for myself, right? We live in a very judgmental world. I'm a very analytical person. And I think one trait of a good enough parent is the parent who can just repair their mistakes, right? You don't expect yourself to be perfect. You're probably not going to get through your children's childhood without yelling. But when you do yell, repair it. Show them that there are more constructive ways to handle that situation. Model the repair. I just feel like parenting, as in life, is about just getting your ducks in a row, and then they get messed up and you get them back in a row and then they get messed up, right? Like, so it's giving it your all, like trying to do your best and being engaged in it, but then knowing the ducks are going to all get up and get all over the place, and then you just get them all back, you know, and that's the process. That's life.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a great note to end this part of the episode on, because it really does sort of sum up the whole stew there. So again, thank you so much for doing this, Christine. It's like incredibly valuable information. And we went to some pretty delving places there for a second. I liked it a lot. So we're going to be back in just a few days with part two of our conversation with Dr. Christine Carter. On today's episode, we explored subjects related to parents, children, and our relationship with that relationship. Christine began by using herself as an example of how our relationship with our parents can affect us throughout life. We then talked for a while about how we can be better parents or children and both meet our own needs while providing the other party opportunities to feel heard and respected. In part two of this conversation, which will be coming out in just a few days, we'll be exploring the sweet spot. But we might have a little surprise for you before then, so stay on the lookout. Until next time, thanks for listening.